What's up, my drinking comrades, and welcome to the Beverage Click podcast, dedicated to the discussion surrounding beverages with an Asian perspective. I'm your host, Sean Oh, co-founder of the Beverage Click Academy, which is based in Singapore. Now, today, we will venture into the topic of Scotch whisky, which has pretty much dominated the spirits category for many, many years. We have a multi-talented guest in the beverage field that has joined us as a guest speaker. He is a fellow Beverage Click alumnus. He's a certified whiskey ambassador, has scored a distinction grade in WSET Level 3 in wines and spirits, as well as a certified sake sommelier certification conferred by the Sake Sommelier Association. His professional experience spans across being the current head of direct to consumers Southeast Asia for William Grant & Sons, managing the prestige portfolio of single malt brands such as Glenfiddich and the Balvenie. Prior to this, he also represented major spirits companies such as Edrington as well as Pernod Ricard. Hey James, how's it going, man?
Hi Sean, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invitation and to be here today. It's a great pleasure to be back in the Beverage Click Academy to share some of the insights on whiskies. And I hope that I'm able to answer some of the questions today.
Well, I'm sure you'll be definitely be able to answer most of them. And besides, we're keeping it as a casual conversation. Before we start, why not let's hear about how you started off with your whiskey journey, because clearly, it all started with wine first, right? So please take it away.
Well, you immediately started with the toughest question of all. Now I got to roll back a few years because I'm getting on in age. Well, I first started my journey in Singapore Airlines, incidentally, which was the same as you, Sean. I mean, like a typical bright-eyed youngster then, I decided to join the airlines to see the world. Now, in many years of flying, besides visiting different cultures and sightseeing points around the world, the passion that really was ignited in me was in the world of wines and spirits. I became an air sommelier as well as an F&B trainer for the airlines teaching wine, and got heavily involved in the committee for the Wine Appreciation Group, which is an internal organization in Singapore Airlines that organizes as a curriculum or extra curriculum activities for cabin crew about the topics of everything under the wines and spirits category. Now, from there, I think after many years of being in the wine field, I decided to really cut my teeth in the actual wine and spirits industry. So in 2012, I left the airlines and I joined Pernod Ricard as a brand ambassador for many brands, including Glenlivet, Longmont, Scapa, Strathyler, single malt brands, so as blended Scotch brands such as Chivas and Royal Salute. I had a great time there, and thereafter I moved on to Edrington Group, where I was the manager for brand education for Southeast Asia, and I oversee a group of brand advocates overseeing the brand education of whiskey and single malts, in particular the brands of Macallan and Highland Park. And we work around the region to assist the trade as well as consumers in deciphering all the nagging persistent questions about single malt. And just most recently, about a year ago, I joined William Grant & Sons as the head of direct to consumers Southeast Asia, where I worked together with the team in managing the marketing as well as business development of the prestige portfolio of brands such as Glenfiddich and the Balvenie in the Southeast Asian region. So we've come a long way. I would say that my passion has not dwindled at all, and I'm still heavily passionate about this topic.
Well, it's certainly a long way. It's about 10 years since you left SIA. That's back in, 2012?
Yeah.
And it's quite a CV that you built. Very extensive tour of duty into brand management, distribution, not just wines and spirits.
Absolutely. I think it was really helped by the fact that I really love the topic itself. And so, work becomes an extension of the passion. So I would say I'm still very much energetic about this topic.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so let's start with things like misconceptions. I mean, the whiskey scene in Asia, it's ever booming. You know, it's taken the world by storm, but there seems to be a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings, as well as confusion, you know, going around. So, tell me, are whiskey all the same?
That's a good question. Whiskeys, as a category, is understood by the consumers. It's one category, and we all believe it to be basically a distilled spirit from grains. However, that is not the truth everywhere. Now, whiskies is produced around the world, but the truth is there is actually very little cohesive regulations around the world, or a standard, there's no uniform standard on the definitions of whiskey. In fact, currently, I think only the Scotch Whiskey Association holds the most stringent, yeah, rules about whiskey production, where they define whiskey to be only made from grains, which includes barley, corn, rye,
wheat,
and it must be aged for a minimum of 3 years in oak barrels, and must be bottled in Scotland with an ABV of above 40%. Now, you would think that this would be consistent around the world, but it is not. In fact, I think Japan has only just recently implemented their own rules around their whiskey making.
That's right.
And it's closely quite aligned with the Scotch regulations. But elsewhere in the world, I would say with the exception of Ireland, everywhere else is pretty much still no man's land. Although a lot of whiskey producers have taken it upon themselves to follow the general rules from the Scotch Whiskey Association as the guidelines, the truth is there is no governing body to say, hey, you can't make whiskey a different way or another. So one such example is India, where many bottles that are being labeled as whiskey are actually in truth made from molasses or other products. So they're actually closer in relation to rums rather than whiskies, and likewise for the far further markets as well. So it really blows the mind that what you see as a whiskey, or what is being labeled as a whiskey on a bottle in front of you, may not actually be whiskey.
That's very insightful. Indeed, I've came across a couple of whiskies that seemingly are whiskey, but turn out not to be. How about, you know, on the topic of blended versus single malt, because that seems to be a very highly contested subject. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, that's actually a topic that is very, very big, and I would say it would take a long time to deep dive into the nuances of it. In fact, I would highly recommend a course here to fully understand that.
Thanks for shout out.
Yes, for the ease of confusion, I mean, there's actually many layers of to this question about single malt versus blended. In truth, there is categories such as vetted malt or blended malt. There is single malt. There's single grain. There is also Scotch whiskey in general, or blended whiskey. So I think it's a topic that I can't extensively cover in this short session. But I can. But in to take point from your question, I would say perhaps the question is referring to the basics of what is a single malt and a blended whiskey. Now, to simplify it, a single malt is actually whiskey that is distilled from only barley, and from a single distillery. And while a blended whiskey is basically whiskey that is made from an assortment of grains, which includes barley, but also rye, wheat, corn, etc., and coming from multiple distilleries. They each have different impacts on taste and style, but that is a perhaps a bigger question.
Yeah, I mean, from my personal perspective, it always seems that grain whiskies tend to be a lot sweeter. But again, you know, it might not appear to be the so for other consumers. I mean, truth be told, blended whiskies do form 90% of the market. So a very small percentage of it is formed by a small amount of what is known as single cask. So in terms of flavor profile, do you think blended whiskies versus single malts, which are also considered blended, I suppose, in their own right, how different would they be?
Well, I can't answer that without diving a little bit deeper. First, a single malt whiskey is purely made from barley. Now, barley has long been believed or the notion that is held that it contributes the best flavors for whiskey as compared to grains and corn and such. Of course, different countries will have their own spin on that theory. But with context of the Scotch whiskey, that's what a malt whiskey refers to. Now, a single distillery will be able to lend provenance of the style and characters of the whiskey. Now, in Scotland, there are many regions of whiskey production: the Highlands, the Lowlands, the Speyside, Campbelltown, as well as Isla. These are and the islands. Now, these are some of the main regions producing whiskey. So, by knowing where a particular whiskey is coming from, which single malt house, will be able to give you an inkling of the style of whiskey that you are drinking. Now, a blended whiskey is, as what it suggests, coming from different distilleries. Now, with that in mind, the character is less defined by the region or the distillery that it comes from, but more from the brand's style. Now, the brand can take on many styles. They can choose to make a very strong, robust whiskey, or they can choose to make a lighter and floral style of whiskey. It's all in the hands of the blender or the master whiskey making, as you would call them. So I would say the taste of single malts versus blended whiskeys are very diverse. It will be hard to pinpoint a particular style, but I would say that most consumers do choose to follow the houses that they like, and that's probably the best way to go, to follow your personal preferences of the regions and the style of whiskey that you personally like, and you shouldn't go wrong with that. Whether or not each is better, I think that's also a matter of personal preference. Although in general understanding, the single malts are usually more characterful because they're more stylistically aligned to the house style of the distillery. And blended whiskies has also long been, I would say, impressed upon people that they are usually more harmonious, they are smoother and much more welcoming to the novice palate. Now, my take on it is I have different occasions for drinking single malts versus blended whiskies. Now, when I am with my friends, I tend to pop open a bottle of single malt because of the strong character styles of a single malt whiskey. Me and my friends tend to go into a deeper discussion, be agreeable or not, about whether the style of whiskey is agreeable to all the palates. Is it too smoky? Is it too sweet? Is it too rich? Is it too light? Is it too floral? And this discussion can only be concluded by a second opinion, a third opinion, in the form of whiskey glasses. And by the end of the evening, we will probably have emptied out the whole bottle without reaching a conclusion. Yeah. Whereas I love to drink blended whiskeys by myself when I'm sitting at home watching Netflix or listening to some nice music, where usually a blended whiskey does for me less characterful, but much more of a
palatable.
It's more palatable. It's a soothing drink where nothing really shouts out at you. So it's more of a pleasant enjoyment over the evening. So I would say these are the two, I would say, broad categorization I would place upon the two styles of malts which is, I mean, blended malt or blended whiskey versus single malt. And it's really a personal preference of what you like and when you like it.
Good. Yeah, I think that there is definitely something out there for every kind of drinker. So moving on to the next topic, which is whiskey trends. Now, whiskey trends have come and go, or I would say drink trends have come and go. So when it comes to whiskey, how was it like in the past, and what's it currently, you know, in the now, and what do you think is going to happen in the future pertaining to local as well as the Southeast Asian scene?
Well, you know, whiskey has really come a long way. I mean, it evolved from way, way long ago, you know. From it was viewed as medicinal in
it still is for some people.
Yeah, it probably is. It is for me. It helps me relax for sure. I will not boast of any health benefits, but I would say the mental benefits from whiskeys are definitely applicable to me. But it's come a long way. And, you know, in the olden days, whiskeys in the past, I would say in the 1400s, 1500s, or even 1800s, were very different from what they are today. They were less... They were not about single malt or blended scotch or such. They were basically just strong distillates from grains. And they were drank very young, not at the minimum requirement of 3 years that they are today. And they were obviously not reduced to a more balanced ABV level as well. And that has evolved over the years. In the 1960s, William Grant and Sons, or Glenfiddich, was the first to propagate the idea of a single malt, where we really made popular the category of single malt whiskies, which is a whiskey made from barley from a single distillery. And things have changed ever since. And you're absolutely right that although the current trend is about 90% of whiskies that is being drank worldwide are blended, that is actually slowly changing as the world is pivoting and people are really much more into knowledge. They understand their whiskies better and they start to not just look at whiskey as just a form of alcohol or a drink. They start to understand that behind every single whiskey label, there is a lot of heritage, there's a lot of history, there's a lot of stories, there's a lot of workmanship and craft behind the whiskies. And so single malt whiskies, which I would say boast some of the strongest legacies and stories with regards to this aspect, are really making a very big wave and is growing in popularity around the world. Which was previously dominated by blended scotch, people are drinking single malts way more nowadays. And this has cascaded into, of course, regions like us in Singapore and Southeast Asia. Now, Singapore being a very developed market for alcohol, where we are actually more used to drinking fine wines and spirits, the take-up of single malts, it's, you know, is inevitable. So I would say that the percentage of single malt drinkers versus blended scotch whiskey drinkers in Singapore will be in a ratio that perhaps will put the 90-10% rule to the challenge. Whereas in other parts of Southeast Asia, that is also slowly changing as well. As in Thailand, Indonesia, and such markets, or Vietnam, which was dominated by blended scotch, and it still is, but you will see that ratio slowly declining in favor of the single malt whiskey categories as the youth, I would say, and the current generation of whiskey consumers, they are much more affluent, they travel widely, they go around the world, they perhaps have studied not only in Singapore, but also in UK, in everywhere, where they've all been bitten by the whiskey bug. And they came back to the countries and they start influencing their peers, their friends, their families, into trying single malt whiskies, and we see the growth in single malt whiskies to be growing very much exponentially in the region, and that's why my focus in the job is to make available of such ambrosia to make it available to the people in the region. The trend has also been into collectible whiskies as well, as the value of whiskey has been rising year on year. In fact, it has been growing faster than gold, which is very surprising to me as well. As a commodity, it has outperformed gold, luxury cars, luxury bags, luxury watches. In fact, you will see many auctions going on now where the value of whiskies have hit record highs. We have auctioned bottles of Glenfiddich and Balvenie, which broke records in Sotheby's recently. You will also see many other whiskies by other brands breaking such records as well, as the demand for collectible whiskey has surged so much in recent years. So it's great. It's great news for me, for the trade and for the industry, and for the consumers as well, that whiskey is seeing such a resurgence like never before. Mind you, in the 80s, there was actually a glut in the whiskey trade, and there was a period of time where the whole whiskey industry was worrying about will it die off, and quite a few distilleries actually closed down in the 80s as well because of the economic
downturn, right?
Downturns and its impact on the whiskey market. But with recent years, I think it's growing really fast, and I don't see it tapering off at all, as I see people becoming more and more interested about the history, and the provenance of single malt whiskies as well as blended whiskies. That I think is a category that will outlive all of us and will definitely be even more popular in future. The demand currently outstrips the supply, and already you are seeing this having an impact on whiskey prices around the world as well. And this is something that all the brands are concerned about as well. So this is just I think this is just one part of about the whiskey trends that's happening right now. But yeah, whiskey is really, really growing really fast.
Okay. Well, I guess it's only time will tell, and it is just one for the future. Now, since we're talking about future, whiskey investments. Now, it's also a largely hot topic because we have heard of many people in finance, the rich and famous, the affluent, that's investing quite a bit of money into whiskey investment. Do you have any thing to say about whiskey investment?
Well, I don't think I even manage my finances well, so I will not lend my thoughts into whiskey investments. But I'm a big proponent of collecting the whiskies that you like, because I still view whiskey as something that's very close to heart, something I'm very passionate about. And I think it means so much more value to me when it is being drunk than when it is being collected on a shelf collecting dust. So I do appreciate the fact that people are really investing into whiskies. That's great for everyone. But my personal recommendation is, for everyone to buy at least, three bottles of any whiskies that you like. One to keep in case it appreciates in value, which is always a good thing because it will pay itself off. And to have one or two bottles to open up and drink with your friends. So if you drink it and hey, you like it, share with your friends, share some love. And that's the way I buy my whiskeys at least. Into the investments, again, I'm not a financial consultant, but like I said earlier, the price of the whiskey has been really growing very fast and exponentially. And the world is changing with people shifting their attention to Bitcoin and commodities such as gold, because there's this whole worldwide impression that currency is much more volatile nowadays than it was in the past. Putting your money in your bank is probably not gaining as much interest as what a piece of property, a piece of gold, even a luxury watch or car and whiskey can bring you. So again, I'm all for it. Just that I would not be inclined to give you advice on whiskeys, on the concept of whiskey investing. But I'll happily guide you on which brands do accrue or have shown the trend of picking up value, and they might be, you know, worthy collectibles. Well, in any case, I find that any whiskies that you like and you collect, you will never lose value because you will always be ready to be open up and make everybody happy. Now, happiness is a currency, so I believe in investing in your personal happiness.
Okay, that's some positivity talk there. I think that really resonated with me because, well, not many people know this, but I collect toys, vintage toys. So buy one to play and buy one to keep, that makes total sense to me. But you know, as anything with iconic value, there is always frauds, knockoffs, including toys. So when it comes to whiskey fraud, do you see it eventually eradicating, or do you think it's just going to get worse?
Well, whiskey fraud is a very big issue for the whiskey trade in general. Now, I say this not just to the economic implications on the brands, but as well as on the consumers. On one end of the spectrum, you have whiskies that are mislabeled, or when an inferior product is being passed off as a superior product in order to gain financial gain to the you know, that corrupt or supplier. But on the other hand, it can dive into the dangerous world of illegal whiskey making, where what you are drinking may be poison itself. I'm sure you've heard about recent cases, I think in a nearby resort, where the resort bought whiskey from a supplier that was not verified, or where the provenance was not clear. Mm-hmm. And I think quite a few of the hotel or resort guests actually died after drinking the whiskeys. We have cases in Indonesia or Thailand where people have went blind after a session as well. And this is a very big problem for us because the impressions of whiskies causing adverse effects to health are influenced by these examples, which came about only because of the whiskey fraud problem. Now, and this will only grow because, as I mentioned earlier, the value of whiskey has been increasing, as the supply is not enough to meet demand. Whiskey prices are getting much more expensive. And so therein lies an opportunity for people with less than stellar moral values to come in and try to exploit this situation by trying to fill in the market demand with inferior products. This is, I would say, a very serious situation for the industry, of course. Whiskey brands have been trying to solve this problem by implementing many areas of protection for the consumers, such as enhanced authentication measures, barcodes, hologram stickers, even NFTs, so that the consumers can buy with ease and ease of mind, as well as taking comfort that the fact that the whiskeys they have bought are from the right provenance. So I implore everyone who is buying whiskeys out there to always question the provenance of a whiskey before you buy it. Sometimes a cheaper price may not be the best, and I don't mind paying premium to buy a whiskey that is closer to source. So it's important to buy from accredited distributors and suppliers so that the provenance of whiskeys can always be tracked. That's very important. And this is also very important when it comes to collectible whiskies as well, because besides the health implications, you also have financial loss implications where you may have spent a large amount of money buying into a bottle of fake whiskey. That's obviously not an ideal situation we wish to be placed in. So do buy your whiskeys from the right sources. Do check that they are from the official distributors, importers, always. And that's something that I cannot stress enough.
Yeah, I think the health implication part is really something of concern. I mean, as if we don't have enough health issues in the world already.
Yes, of course.
Since you mentioned about NFTs being non-fungible tokens, do you think that NFTs are here to stay for the whiskey industry? Is there a place for it in the whiskey industry?
Wow, that's an interesting question. It's a big topic. I think recently, Glenfiddich was actually the first to launch an NFT token with a single malt whiskey as well. I remember very clearly because it was just a few months ago. We released a 1974 single malt, single cask Glenfiddich that was finished off in an Armagnac cask, aged 46 years, with an NFT token through Blockbar, which is an NFT platform for trading of spirits and wines, fine wines and spirits. I think we were one of the industry first. And through the whole process, I actually got to learn a lot more about the NFT space. It's quite interesting because NFT allows the distillery to track the provenance of our ingredients or even the from grains to the field where the barley were grown in, to the distillery processes, who were the people who actually managed the stills at the point of production, to the source of the bottles, the bottle caps, the labels, and track the entire process through the supply chain until the bottles are filled and bottled up and brought to the market. It's a great boost to the industry because from the NFT technology or the blockchain technology rather, we are able to determine the supply chain process, the provenance of the supply chain process. It helps us authenticate whiskies better in market. So if we have a bottle in say Singapore that which we identify the NFT identity card, I don't know, something like that, that infers it to be a whiskey that was actually meant for another market, we can then try to track back the process. Because what if it was a reprinted, for example? This NFT technology can help us detect such bottles because the counterfeit people are probably unlikely to be able to running serial numbers that is accurate to the production house source.
Or replicate those numbers, right?
Yeah, so they will just produce multiple labels that has the same NFT, for example, or the same numbers. So this is one area where we're able to help reduce the fraud process, or rather how this technology has been used by quite a few promising fine wine houses as well in the protection of their authentication. And on top of that, NFT also has a second use case where you can track the ownership of the whiskies after they are being bought from the distributors or from the retail chain. When you take them off the retail chain, NFT technology is able to help you track the ownership. So if, say, 10 years later or 20 years later, you're having a bottle of whiskey that's NFT technology, you'll be able to trace back who are the owners before you as well. And this is very, very important. However, of course, it takes time for this technology to really cement itself in daily usage or utility. Not many years ago, you know, when we hear about WeChat Pay or Grab Pay, it was a new technology to us and none of us ever foresee that today it's almost an everyday thing for all of us. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, in my own personal opinion at least, that NFT is a technology that will stay. The blockchain technology will be something going forward that will be implemented by a lot of companies and houses in tracking of their goods. We already see this being implemented by some luxury houses as well in the fashion space. So I think it's a matter of time before the entire wine and whiskey scene picks up NFT as an important tool in their daily operations.
I think those are very valid points. NFT seems to be in its infancy stage. But other than just being a currency, which I initially thought as just one function, it actually acts as a safeguard, which you mentioned. I think that's a very valid point. And I guess with that, I think it's probably a good time to wrap up our whiskey episode. I really want to thank you for dedicating your time to share your insights about the whiskey industry and trends. Do you have any final words before we leave the studio?
Well, thank you very much, Sean. It's a very short session, and I wish I could share more. Once we get started talking about whiskey, the topic is really endless. And I would say, hey guys out there, do check out the Beverage Click Academy to understand more about whiskeys. There's a lot to learn. And for you people out there who are just getting into whiskeys, try to taste widely. And there's a whole world of whiskeys out there that bring to you different dimensions of the tasting experience. And it's really, really awesome. So I hope that you guys pick up whiskey and make it part of your daily lives even. I mean, not daily, by the way. There's a strong recommendation on the units of alcohol one should consume per week. So I urge everyone to drink responsibly, but drink well. Drink lesser, but drink high quality whiskeys so that you get a better experience out of it all. So thank you very much, Sean, for the chance to speak here, and I look forward to coming back again.
Yeah, I appreciate those words. So before we close, a shout out to our whiskey and spirit certification programs that are running monthly. Do check out our website for schedules. These programs would include things like your WSET level 1 and 2 in spirits. We have become recently the exclusive provider for the EWA, Edinburgh Whiskey Academy certification in Scotch whiskey. So if you'd like to listen to more of such drinks content, please do remember to follow and subscribe to our channel. And I do look forward to seeing you at the next episode. And remember, a drink always tastes better when the company clicks. And as they say in Scotland, Sláinte. Cheers.
Cheers.